This is a 720 to go podcast from Chicago's WGN Radio 720.
This podcast is sponsored by ADM.
As one of the world's largest agricultural processors, ADM is uniquely positioned to serve the world's growing needs for abundant food and renewable energy. ADM.
When it comes to the business of America's farmland, you need the information from the people who know it best. That's why we bring you AgriCast with Orion Samuelson and Max Armstrong.
Thank you very much, Roger, and good morning to you and good morning, world, as we join you this morning for our weekly get-together on Saturday morning at 5 o'clock, taking a look at the world of agriculture, which impacts all of us. How many times have you heard me say over the years, if you eat, you're involved in agriculture? And a very simple statement. That's what we're going to be talking about this morning. Talk a little bit about the enthusiasm over the passage of the Farm Bill in the House. But I'm not one of those who thinks we have a Farm Bill yet. We won't have a Farm Bill until it's on the desk of the president and he signs it. More about that coming up a little bit later. And also, we're going into county fair season across the country, and I don't know if you heard earlier this week on one of my morning reports, but Prairie Farmer put together some interesting facts about Illinois county fairs. Surprised me, and I've been going to them for half a century, but surprised me with some of the figures and the numbers that they provided there. But before we get to all of that, we're going to get to Jim Fazell to talk about farmers markets with me. So stand by. We'll do that when we continue here on the Saturday Morning Show. Well, he's been away a couple of weeks, but he's back in the Midwest and here to talk to us about the latest in summertime. Good morning, Jim Fazell.
Well, good morning, Orion. Yeah, I floated back in.
Yeah, didn't we all?
Yeah, you know the question. In our rain gauge already this month, almost 9 inches of rain after nearly 10 inches in May. I think it's enough. I hope it doesn't completely stop and we get none for the rest of the summer, but it is really wet.
So well, anyway, as Greg Solia says, when it quits raining, it gets dry very quickly.
Yeah, and he's right, because the percolation that's developed when this water falls and goes down through the soil doesn't stop when the rain stops. It continues to go down and it pulls in air behind it. So you folks who are having a lot of water right now can expect it to dry out within a week or 2 weeks after this stuff stops, but so be ready. Anyway, it's June, it's summer, and summer is officially here, having started last Thursday.
Indeed.
And since we can't get out into the garden, probably the best thing to do is to take advantage of the community farmer markets.
They're open. Good idea. I love farmers markets. I haven't gotten to one yet this year, but talk to me about what's going on at farmer markets right now, Jim.
Well, grab your umbrella and head out. That's fine. But yeah, there are most of them. You know, our farmers, our growers around here are well into the season, even though most of us amateur gardeners are just really beginning. It's harvest time for them. Most are at full capacity, most of these markets, so it's really time to get out and make a visit. The local growers grow and select their best each week. You know, this is not just stuff that's left over from shipping to the other markets. This is stuff that's grown particularly for our farmers' markets. They spend the winter planning their plantings so that they have stuff arriving every week during the season. Not very easy to do, but they somehow manage to do it. Then every day, when they're going to have a market, the day before the market, they go out and pick the stuff. A lot of them process that stuff very early in the morning, brought to the community market fresh every morning. Our local producers are amazing. They never cease to astound me at how well they do this and how good the stuff is that they produce. And, of course, there are certain items that we don't grow locally, but these are brought in. And, you know, our production area here in Chicagoland includes parts of four states. So we get blueberries and cherries or peaches from Michigan and Indiana. We actually get asparagus from Michigan and from western Illinois. And then there's a lot of early produce, things like the early tomatoes and so forth, that are grown farther south in the state of Illinois, or actually in some greenhouses. So in the markets right now, we can expect things like the first tomatoes. My tomatoes don't even have tomatoes on the vines yet. Peppers, asparagus, which is pretty nearly the end of the season, but there's still plenty coming in. Lots of greens. I've noticed bunching radishes, bunching onions, There are cherries in already. I think these are coming probably from southwest Michigan. Strawberries are in, rhubarb more. There's plenty of stuff out there. You need to be right. Take a basket when you go out to the farmer's market and take your checkbook, because there's stuff that's coming in that is absolutely one day old fresh, and you can't get it any better anyplace else. Some of these other markets have other things. It's very interesting because as they've grown throughout the years, many of them have diversified. We have people that have a lot of bakery goods. In fact, I know of a couple of markets where they have bakers that particularly bake for their market. These would be breads and all kinds of fancy dessert rolls and so forth. And we have honey producers here in the Chicagoland area that have honey, fresh honey, on the market. We have mushroom growers right across the border in Michigan. In fact, you know, Chicagoland used to be a major mushroom producer. Many of the mushrooms that we got when we were kids came locally. Cheese has come from several producers around the Midwest. And we also have some of our meat producers that, particularly in the central western part of the state of Illinois, that produce frozen meat. And they come to the markets with good frozen meat, fresh from the farm, and some bring in eggs as well. So there are quite a few things that you can get at the markets. Don't be just looking for a few tomatoes and a pepper. There are a lot of other things that you can get, sometimes only at these farmers markets. The community markets are open usually one day a week, although some communities have more than one a week. Saturdays and Sundays are the big days. Of course, that's when everybody's available to go. But there aren't enough farmers to go around for all those times, so other markets are available on practically every day of the week. You need to check with your local community to find out when there is one in your area. Or you can check with the newspapers. I know the Chicago Tribune, if you go to chicagotribune.com/features/food, they often have a list of the Chicago farmers markets. And usually they're listing, I haven't seen it this year, I know it's already out, of all the farmers markets in the metropolitan area. That's worth pulling out of the Tribune and saving so that you can go visit some of these, because each one is different, each one is unique. The Chicago farm markets, in fact, this week there was a feature on one of the television stations of one of the Chicago farm markets where everybody was out in the rain with their umbrellas, but the market was open. So don't let the rain stop you. If it's raining in your area, that doesn't mean that the markets aren't going to be open. They'll be there. These folks that go to these things are used to working out in the weather. Some markets have a lot of fun items for them. They have their own specialties. Most are dog-friendly. In fact, our local community market, that's the place you go on Saturday morning with your dog to meet your friends and to visit. Most of them have food items like popcorn or hot dogs. I know one market features quesadillas. Donuts and crepes. Name it in some market will have it. In fact, believe it or not, I know of one market where you can get a Bloody Mary when you go around the market on Saturday morning.
Not a bad idea.
That's a good way to start off the day. There are other things, too. I know one of the markets has one of these carts that we used to see on the streets when we were kids. It's a green cart with a big wheel on it, and the gentleman walks down the street, and the thing goes ding, dong, ding. You know the knife sharpener is out.
Yes.
One of the markets has a knife sharpener like that, and of course they have other types of knife sharpeners as well. A lot of events for kids. They have, at some of the markets, they have these balloon clown people that blow up balloons and make all kinds of animals with them. They have educational stuff. In fact, you know, the University of Illinois Master Gardeners tend to go to these places, and if you have gardening questions, that's a good place to get the answers. They also have displays. They have some of the pamphlets that are available from the University of Illinois available for the public. Most of them are free, although there might be a charge on some of them. So it's a good place to meet with your friends, to visit the growers. You know, it's interesting to visit with them, especially if you're a gardener, and you can talk to them to find out how they get around some of the problems that we normally encounter. And you might even see one of us there, Orion. I know that you and I both get out to these places, and if you recognize us, stop and say hello.
Man, well, by all means, do that. I don't know if I'll make it today, but maybe in the next week or two.
Yeah. And, you know, there's a lot of rain going on right now, but it's not going to rain forever.
That's true.
So out in the garden, we need to be concerned a little bit with the things that are particularly bad when we have rain. Two of the things that are very bad in wet weather are earwigs and slugs. Earwigs you can control with 7 insecticide, and there are some others that can be used. Slugs, you need to use slug bait, not on the plants, but in the row next to the plant so that they'll crawl out to it. And the old stale beer thing in a shallow pan set into the ground so that they can fall in, it does work. Be sure that you keep on top of the weeds as soon as the things dry out a little bit. And actually, this is the time of year we've all been waiting for. It's summer. It's
right.
Not going to stay wet forever, so we need to get out and enjoy.
And I did see an article this week on concern over a tree blight, a blight that's impacting trees. So if you haven't heard of it yet, maybe we can talk about that in our next get-together.
Yeah, we'll do that. I'll get some more information on it. I heard that or saw that article as well, and I don't have the details right now, but we'll get to it, and we'll as soon as we know what we're talking about, we'll talk.
And interesting that you talked about the schedule of planting, because a few days ago I ran into Jim Gobert of the Gobert Farm out here in the northwest suburbs, not too far from where I live. And I said, how's planting going? And he said, fine. And then I asked, how often do you have to plant sweet corn so that you have it in September and early October? And he says, we generally plant it every 2 weeks so that we have it coming ripe in time for the later season.
Takes a lot of planning.
It really is. Yep. Well, thank you for sharing your knowledge with us, as always, Jim, and we'll look forward to your next visit here on the Saturday Morning Show. Jim Fazell, our specialist in ornamental horticulture, with us on the Saturday Morning Show on WGN. It's 24 minutes after 5 o'clock. Good morning to you. Good to have you with us here on the Saturday Morning Show. I mentioned earlier that this week the folks at Prairie Farmer put together an interesting fact sheet on county fairs. Don't know if you were with us when we talked about that, but let me share with you again, because if you like county fairs, this is kind of interesting. This is now just for the state of Illinois, where in 2017 there were 92 county fairs plus 11 fairs and expositions, a total of 103 fairs. But what county fairs attracted more people? This I found fascinating. The number one attended county fair in Illinois last year, Boone County. They had 211,473 people. Second place in attendance, DeKalb County Fair, 177,660. Third, Winnebago, 130,000 people. Fourth, the Lake County Fair, and they had 100,000. And then the DuPage County Fair coming in number five, and they had 98,000 people attend the fair last year. Total county fair attendance in Illinois in 2017, 2,260,774 people. And the other fascinating item, the largest fairgrounds in the state of Illinois by acres. The biggest fairground, DeKalb, the sandwich fair that we go to every year. Their fairgrounds are 182 acres. Second place, Kane County in St. Charles, 171. Third place in size is the Lake County Fair in Grays Lake, 159 acres, followed by the Boone County Fair at Belvedere, 152 acres, and rounding out the list is the Grundy County Fair at Morris, Illinois, with 110 acres. So go to a county fair, support the county fair, and head for the state fair as well. Yesterday, we got the monthly cattle on feed report from the USDA, and ranchers in May put more cattle into U.S. feedlots than anticipated compared with the same period a year ago. The data showed the June 1st feedlot cattle supply climbed 4% from a year earlier, its highest for the month since USDA began tabulating the data in 1996. Analysts attributed last month's unexpected feedlot inflow to a surge in calves and feeder cattle from Canada and Mexico, our two NAFTA trading partners. And some analysts had predicted that fewer cattle moved into feedlots in May. Mercantile Exchange live cattle futures this coming Monday may have a mildly bearish reaction to Friday's report, but traders may soon turn to the near-term market fundamentals, such as beef demand and cattle prices. The USDA report showed placement numbers in May, 2,124,000 head. The government put the feedlot cattle supply as of June 1st at 11,553,000, thousand head, up 4%. From a year ago, and USDA said the number of cattle sold to packers, the number of cattle marketed, were up 5.4% in May from a year ago. So we'll keep watching the market on Monday to see what, if any, reaction traders will have to those cattle numbers. And we're going to check news headlines in a couple of minutes, but one of the headlines that hit the world of agriculture this week, we have a farm bill. Well, at least a lot of people said we have a farm bill, and indeed the House, after a month of political gamesmanship to force votes on controversial immigration reform measures, the House narrowly approved their version of the 2018 Farm Bill by two votes, 213 to 211. And that was a revote of the same measure that failed in May. Congressional Democrats, unanimous in their opposition to the Farm Bill, while another 20 Republican members were also voting against the bill. And people said, hey, we have a farm bill. No, we don't have a farm bill, in my opinion, until the president signs the bill. And I think with a two-vote margin of victory in the House, we are going to have a very contentious conference session between the House and the Senate versions, and particularly on the old food stamp program, now known as SNAP, Supplemental Nutritional Assistance Program. Big disagreement between city members of Congress and agricultural members of Congress. I think it's going to be a very tough conference session putting the final touches to the Farm Bill. Thank you very much, Roger, and we continue on the Saturday morning show until 6 o'clock news time this morning. The first thing we do on this portion of the show is to cover Samuelson Says. It's brought to you by Wink Products Company, makers of quality specialty cleaning products since 1947. And I am Orion Samuelson, and this week, talking about good neighbors.
If you're frustrated by slow drains, or if you find yourself standing in water when you take a shower, the cause could be hair and soap scum buildup. Well, speed up your drains and solve your problem with Wink Hair Clog Blaster. Don't call the plumber. Pick up Wink Hair Clog Blaster instead. Wink Hair Clog Blaster. It does the job for you. Be sure to check out all the products offered by visiting their website at Wink, W-H-I-N-K, wink.com.
As we wind down June Dairy Month, I want to share with you a bad news, good news story that happened not too many miles from where I live in northern Illinois just a few days ago. A dairy barn caught fire at 4 o'clock in the morning, and despite the efforts of several local fire departments and neighbors, it burned to the ground in a short time. But the owners did get all of the 93 cows safely out of the barn before it burned. But a burned barn on a dairy farm is a real tragedy, as it was in this case. But then, on the other side, there is that good neighbor policy that exists in rural America. Not too far from where the barn burned was another farm, where the barn and milking parlor were standing empty because the owner had recently decided to quit milking, sold all the cows, and went into the calf-raising business. Now, you can probably finish the story from here. Where do you take cows to milk when you have lost all of your facilities and cows have to be milked daily? Well, the dairy farmers who sold the dairy cows off their farm said, load them up, bring them here. The fire started at 4 a.m., and by noon, thanks to the help of neighbors with trucks and the neighbors with the empty dairy barn, the 93 cows were all moved and in place, ready for the evening milking. Despite the different surroundings and the equipment, it went very well. Now, losing a barn on a dairy farm is more than the loss of property. It is an emotional tragedy. But thanks to the good help of the neighbors, the dairy farm will survive, their cows survived, and they will continue to produce milk for all of us. So thank you for being such good neighbors and proving once again that people in rural communities truly care about their neighbors and are always ready to help. My thoughts on Samuelson Says. It's a presentation of Tribune Radio Networks, 22 minutes before 6 o'clock. Max Armstrong standing by with his market guest when we continue here on the Saturday Morning Show.
Brian Basting joins us here from Bloomington, Illinois, Advanced Trading. Well, it's not just been breathtaking, it's been ugly, hasn't it, from the producer's standpoint, to see a couple of dollars wiped off on the value of soybeans, not quite a dollar on corn, but it's been substantial there, and to see so much uncertainty in play. I guess the certainty that we have is the crop condition rating at the moment. Corn looks so good, and so do the soybeans.
It's certainly backed up with the crop condition ratings at the moment, Max. We're looking at some historically strong ratings for corn and some really, really strong ratings for beans, too. Now, having said that, that's only, of course, as of mid-June. And, of course, as your listeners know, we got a long way to go. But the market remembers last year, too, that crop condition ratings were low, and we ended up with a very strong crop. So sometimes the market may discount these crop condition ratings. The market is not doing that today, however.
We have seen, generally speaking, crop condition ratings go down as the season goes on, but that hasn't always been the case. I mean, we've seen an exception or two to that. It's very possible that this corn condition rating could continue to be this high, I suppose, as the season goes on.
That's certainly a possibility. I wrote a piece on that within the last week or two, Max, and you'd look at the last 30 years of history since they started the crop conditions, I believe, in 1986. And you do have some years where you do see the crop condition ratings start high and falter. But as you mentioned, you do have years where you see the ratings start high and hold high throughout the entire summer, in some cases even nudge a bit higher.
The rains that we've been getting over a widespread area of the Corn Belt in recent days have been excessive in some spots, but generally speaking, rain is good for the crop, isn't it?
And generally speaking, there are some areas that really needed that rain. Western Illinois, for example, was getting quite dry. Parts of eastern, southeastern Iowa. One area that continues to be dry, I have not seen what the latest forecast is. Missouri has just struggled a bit here this summer, or late this spring and summer. But some of those areas, as you mentioned, were dry and needing some rain. Some areas have received too much, but that's an exception rather than the overall rule at the point.
The thing that occurs to me, too, dumping these rains in, we got off to such a great start with this crop. As you've driven down the roads and you've looked at just at least that eyeball inspection, the windshield inspection from along the road, boy, it's a good even stand, not nearly as many wet spots out there as we've seen in other years.
Yeah, people have a tendency to forget in 2017, Max, even though we ended up with a stellar corn yield, there were many instances in 2017 where we had replant of corn, even replant of replant, and it still ended up with a great yield. This year, most of that crop, as you mentioned, if you planted 35, 36,000 plants, nearly all of them have come up. So the emergence level has been good. The stands are good. Now, we've got a long way to go. We don't want to get ahead of ourselves too far here, but so far, this crop's off to a fine start.
We will see some Illinois crop silking in just a few days from what I'm hearing. West central part of the state, especially southern part of the state, I've been hearing that from some growers that really, when you take a look at it, especially when you get into the last week of June, it's going to be ahead of schedule. The heat has really brought this crop along, hasn't it?
I keep a database on growing degree units, and there's no question that these warm days and warm nights have really added up those GDUs the last 3 to 4 weeks here. And there's no doubt we're already seeing some silking taking place here throughout Illinois.
This moisture foundation, if you will, this rain that we've been getting, where these crops have sufficient moisture at this point, it should help that pollination process, should it not, in helping carry along toward a successful pollination?
Yeah, you look at the history, and I've talked to some of my agronomy friends over the years, you do want to have good moisture moving into pollination, and you do want to get a shot of moisture right after pollination, but still, as your listeners all know, Max, there's a lot of uncertainty with that pollination process. You can have a great-looking crop, and all of a sudden you get a week to 10 days of warm temperatures and dryness. It could hurt the crop. But having said that, yes, I agree that you hit the nail on the head. You want to have that moisture moving into pollination.
Before we quit talking about the crop and start talking about trade, as far as the crop is concerned, most years we do get some kind of a weather bump as this season goes on. As we move past June and into July for the corn crop and August for the soybean crop, it's very common to see weather nervousness and that reflected in price, is it not?
That's true, particularly when you look at the world demand at the moment. The world demand is exceptionally strong still. We're looking, for example, with U.S. corn, a record amount of unshipped corn export sales on the books here as of mid-June. Part of that, of course, is due to the smaller crops in South America, but part of it's due to the growing demand. So I guess my point there is that we need to grow another big crop here in the U.S. To meet that growing demand that we've seen materialize across the world.
While the trade dispute with China has focused on soybeans, there has been spillover effect into corn. It's hurt the corn market too, has it not?
Yeah, it's a psychological spillover into the corn.
Psychological. And to this point, much of this damage in the grain market has been just that, has it not?
Actually, the unshipped soybean sales of U.S. soybeans to the rest of the entire world is record high for this time of year. This is old crop, 17-18 crop for the moment. The issue, of course, arises going forward to see when and if these tariffs are applied, how that's going to affect our sales. Brazil just finished harvesting their largest soybean crop ever in 2018. Brazil cannot meet all of China's needs, but they can meet a good portion of the Chinese needs. Then you look at other issues like substitution that China can do and so on and so forth. There are a lot of moving pieces, but it definitely has the potential to have a big impact later into summer and into fall.
There is so much to speculate about this whole thing. If the tariffs were to go into place and the Chinese still had the need for the beans and the Brazilians didn't have them, is there even the possibility Brazil would buy beans from the United States to fulfill orders for the Chinese market? I guess stranger things have happened. Huh?
You just took the words right out of my mouth. Stranger things have happened. I think another moving piece of this 2018 puzzle is the short crop we saw in Argentina. And so all of a sudden you got the largest soybean meal exporter in the world, Argentina, with a crop that's down about a third from what it was last year. So there would be another candidate also for maybe some imports there. So this is the next 6 to 8 months. I would stretch that all the way out into next spring with the growing season in South America once again. It's going to be very dynamic as far as what shakes out. Obviously, the market earlier this week took a catastrophic view with price collapsing there on Monday. We'll see what happens Monday, Tuesday, what happens here moving forward. But historic times we're living in right now.
When you get to such a certain price level and other markets around the world, now I recognize the fact that 65% of the beans moving in the global market are those purchased by China. But other buyers have to look at this and say, oh, my goodness, this is a fire sale. Do they not? I mean, and say, well, we need to not only cover our needs, but maybe cover our needs for a while here, if they're able to do so.
Yeah, that's well said. I think that an end user in this environment is looking at this as an opportunity, whether it's for soybean meal or for corn. End users have been monitoring this, and I would think that that would be, as you mentioned, a fire sale, a great opportunity for them.
The livestock sector has to look at this very closely, do they not, and say, my goodness, will we continue to have this kind of bargain prices later on in the year? What kind of advice are you sharing?
It certainly is an opportunity for an end user, whether you're an overseas buyer or, as you mentioned, the livestock poultry folks here domestically. An attractive strategy to consider would be to purchase a call option. A call option gives the buyer, an end user, a ceiling in the market, but allows them to participate if the market continues to go lower. So a call option, obviously those options have decreased in value substantially with this sell-off. So that'd be one strategy to consider.
And to the producer who's watched this gut-wrenching experience here in recent days and looking out the window of the farm office or out the kitchen window and looking at crops that look pretty good with a tremendous yield potential and hearing that across the Corn Belt, what do you tell them?
Well, you always want to, in a producer standpoint, you always want to think about defending your balance sheet. How are you going to use the marketing tools available to defend that balance sheet? Obviously, you're looking for an opportunity now to protect bushels you have that already either forward sold or forward protected with a hedge. Some type of rebound here, I think you do want to get coverage on. Again, a put option there gives you a floor in the market, but also leaves you the opportunity to participate if, as you mentioned earlier, we get a weather rally here this summer, for example. A put option does not lock you out of those higher prices, so get a put option in place here. Gives you that downside catastrophic protection, but also gives you an opportunity to participate if the market does have a rebound here.
If you look at the charts and what we've seen happen here, is this an ugly signal for where we're going?
Yeah, if you look at the December 18 corn futures, for example, it's got a double top at 429.5. That's the top that the market made in the summer of 17, and that's the top that the market made to this point before, prior to Memorial Day. So one would say as a technician that's an ugly-looking picture. Much can change, though. I mean, that's only that's about 50, 60 cents away now. But if we get into a weather market rally, things can change in a hurry. So I think that's something to be aware of, but it's not in stone at the moment.
As badly beaten as these markets are, if there were to be some significant encouraging news suddenly on the trade front, the bounce could be very vibrant, could it not? I know we're speculating here, and there are a lot of ifs involved, but the producer needs to be prepared if that happens.
Yes, well said. I think that the short covering that could develop in that environment would be brisk, as you said, not only from the short covering from a speculative side, but also the end user coverage, I think, would spike up. So, yes, I think that would be an opportunity, again, to get some protection in place. I still like that idea of being as flexible as possible, moving into a critical part of the growing season. I would add this, not only our weather season, but also the Black Sea. We've got some issues with some dryness, for example, in parts of Ukraine and Russia. And Ukraine especially has become a key corn exporter in the world. I think that's an area to watch here the next 30 to 60 days. So it's not just the U.S. weather. It's also the Black Sea weather will be very important to watch, as well as China.
Brian, thanks for coming in.
Always good to be with you, Max.
And we're at 5 minutes before 6 o'clock here on the Saturday Morning Show. Time for our weekly crop report update from the folks at BASF. And here's Max.
Well, let's check on crops again this weekend as we visit with one of the technical service representatives for BASF. And out there in the field is Vince Davis, who's been going by a lot of the farm fields over the past few days. Vince, we've had plenty of rain in some spots, maybe a little bit too much in a few spots. What have you seen?
Yeah, Max, we've had some pretty heavy storms across northern Illinois, southern Wisconsin the last few days. blown a few crops down in some areas and some flooding in some areas, but for the most part, crops are looking really, really well across a lot of Wisconsin and northern Illinois, and we're really set up to have a big yield year from what I'm seeing from the windshield and walk-in field so far.
One comment that you hear often from the growers is how fast these crops have been advancing. And it seems like this this earlier than usual heat this year combined with the moisture has really made these fields pop.
Things are advancing very, very quickly. Corn is in a stage where you can stand in the field and hear it grow. I mean, it's rapidly growing vertical. Everyone's pretty much finished up corn post herbicides. And if we get back in the fields in a lot of areas, I expect soybean post herbicides to be done within the next week or so. And that's pretty early as far as being done spraying weed control this year.
This has been a year when, it is, right? We're right in the midst of it, when growers are really watching closely their application of those crop protection products. We had some challenges last year, didn't we?
We had some challenges last year. Really, from a disease perspective, we've had challenges the last 2 or 3 years where we've seen a lot of plant health products really pay off and pay big benefit. And I really hope with the crop that we have this year, both corn and soybeans, even though growers need to watch their dollars, I hope that they don't stop managing these crops for big yield, because as of right now, we got a lot of big yields out there for growers to go get.
We also learned in the past year we have to use more care than ever in the application of these products and to really watch over the possibility of drift. That is a major concern now, isn't it?
Absolutely. On that, as I said, I hope we're done spraying post soybeans within the next week in most all of northern Illinois, southern Wisconsin. We'll be at the end of the growth stage on a lot of soybean fields for being able to apply over-the-top dicamba. And so I'm hoping that we continue to exercise good stewardship there, get those applications wrapped up quickly as far as late season weed escapes, and we have a much better year this year stewardship-wise than last year. So far things look good in that way, and I hope we keep it that way.
The concern about a temperature inversion certainly reared its ugly head last year, didn't it? I mean, it was something that really wasn't on the radar screen of many producers.
There are a lot of us, agronomist producers, crop protection professionals, that are learning a lot more about the dangers of temperature inversions and what to watch for to avoid those this year than we ever have before. And I think it's a really important and a really positive thing for all pesticide applications that we get better at stewarding pesticide products, not just dicamba, but all products. We have to continue to push ourselves to be better stewards of these crop protection products.
And let the record show in the off-season, what I call the education season, when producers are learning a lot about the products over the course of the wintertime. Quite a few folks went to school, did they not, to make sure that they could continue to use these products and use them well?
Boy, I tell you, we worked hard, not only our company at BASF, but other companies as well in this whole profession worked very hard to increase the level of education of pesticide applications over the last winter months. I hope that we see tremendous benefit from that. And from what I've been seeing and hearing of applications the last few weeks, I really do think we made a very positive impact in our overall stewardship efforts and applications. So I hope that continues. You know, it's kind of fun to be in a time where we are continually learning so much more that makes us better agronomists and better stewards of what we're doing out here.
Amen. Vince, good to talk to you. We appreciate it again.
I appreciate it, Max. Look forward to talking with you again.
Vince Davis, Technical Service Representative for BASF.
And our thanks to Max Armstrong, our thanks to Bob Ferguson for doing the engineering this morning, and above all, thanks to you for joining us here on the Saturday Morning Show.
Orion Samuelson keeps you connected to the world of business and agriculture on WGN. Hear his reports weekday mornings on the Steve Cochran Show and during the noon hour on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Plus, catch Orion and Max on Saturday mornings at 5 a.m. only on Chicago's WGN Radio 720.